This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Stay sharp.
Swinging into another weekend, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, Friday. You awake today? The sun's out.
Yeah, we're here.
Huh?
We're here. We're having fun.
Hold on a second. Wrong microphone. Go ahead. I apologize.
Check. There we go. It's good to see you.
I've got the glasses on, and I can't read 2 and 3 on
That's
the board
right.
still.
Maybe I needed to be muted.
We all do sometimes, right?
I mean, we just started.
That's right.
Maybe we'll use the mute button later. Did you have a good week?
I did. How about you?
Busy?
Yeah.
Fun?
I'm trying to pick up the pep, the energy.
I've been tired
this week for some reason, but otherwise things have been good.
That's kind of the feel, though. I feel it's been a little gloomy. Today's beautiful, though.
Yeah.
I was walking in, the sun was out, a lot of the ice is melted now.
Sun came out yesterday.
Fantastic.
Of course, it's supposed to get cold again next week. But
yeah, but we're just going to focus on today.
Absolutely. Good point. I tell you who's focusing on right now is the Milwaukee Brewers. They really shook things up. We got a lot of Notre Dame basketball, football. We'll even talk a little XFL today,
right.
Baseball Hall of Fame, the whole thing. I know Evan is not happy with how the Baseball Hall of Fame voting went down, but
tell
you what, the Milwaukee Brewers decided we're not wasting any time. They go out yesterday and they make a trade with the Miami Marlins for Chris Yelich, and they also sign Lorenzo Cain from the Kansas City Royals. So they've got a surplus of outfielders, and now maybe expecting the Milwaukee Brewers to make a trade, which is what I was saying a couple weeks ago. If the the Cubs had got Lorenzo Cain like Milwaukee did, then maybe that gives them the opportunity to go out and flip one of these other guys and get a starting pitcher. And that's kind of what the Brewers very well might do right now, is make a trade and add another starting pitcher. But I saw Darren Pritchett has on his Twitter account his poll question of the day: who's the more serious threat to the Chicago Cubs this season in the NL Central, the Brewers or the Cardinals? And I've got to think it's the Brewers based on the way they're doing business right now.
Well, here's a potential starting lineup. You have Yelich batting first, Lorenzo Cain second, Braun, Travis Shaw fourth, Domingo Santana, the DH, Eric Thames first base. I mean, they've got some power there.
And Thames, he might end up kind of being a utility guy.
DH, first base. And I think that was something that was pointed out, too, with some of these younger guys now coming in, especially with Kane and Chris. It's going to give some more leeway for Council if he wants to rest some guys.
Yeah.
And in a 162-game season, that's pretty big.
Yep. Kane, don't overlook him. I know a lot of people are already saying, oh, he's 31 years old and blah, all this, like he's this old man or something. He is still.
He batted 300 last year.
Yeah, he was an MVP candidate 2 years ago. He's a gold glove center fielder. He can still really move. So
His splits were really good.
They're, yeah.
Yeah, he was 300, 363, and 440.
Yep.
On base and OPS. So really, really good year last year.
He absolutely is, and they just got better, and it's really the first big free agent sign of this whole offseason, and we're approaching 3 weeks now until pitchers and catchers are reporting. So some of these other guys are going to go, and I would expect sooner than later now that someone has finally gone out and signed one of these guys.
Yeah, and well, I know the conversation I saw yesterday from Boris, Scott Boris, was he was kind of talking to management in general and saying too many teams are not playing for the now, that they are shipping away a lot of their talent and playing for years down the road.
It's a true statement.
This right here is not one of those moves, though.
No, Milwaukee has to play for now, right. And that's kind of during the season. They tried to make some moves last year, but they were too unwilling to give up any of the prospects. These are moves where they don't have to give up a ton. And again, now they can potentially flip someone at the from the major league roster and go out and get a quality starting pitcher, which they still need and which the Cubs could use as well. But you're right, because now what you talk about there with Boris is when you sign one of these free agents like a Lorenzo Cain or whoever it happens to be, Jake Arrieta, Yu Darvish, you're also going to have to give up draft picks.
Right.
And no one wants to give up the draft picks, and teams are kind of stuck in the middle, a lot of them, deciding on, do we want draft picks? Do we really think we can contend right now? Or are we really just one free agent away from being able to do that? So I think it's going to get even more top-heavy, and you're just going to have a ton of dead weight in the middle that are playing for four years from now.
The argument from Boris, too, was that it's watering down the game. You've got the top-tier teams, then you have, like you just pointed out, everybody else that's kind of floundering.
Mm-hmm.
And for baseball, in the interest of baseball, I think his argument is pretty spot on, because if you're essentially throwing away a season and you're publicly saying that we're not playing for this year, we're playing for the future, what does that do to your fan base? And you can't really market your club or your organization until you're saying, okay, now we have the pieces in place, we have the prospects that we want. It could be 3 or 4 years down the road, but now is the time. How do you sell that to a fan base? And if you're a fan of baseball, is your interest level going to be the same if you're watching a team that you know is not invested?
And then you've got teams like the San Francisco Giants, who were horrible last year, especially based on how they've been for the last, 6 to 8 years,
right,
or whatever, winning
great
three
run
championships. But now they're kind of in that middle ground, and they decided they weren't just going to cash it in. They go out and they trade for Evan Longoria, and they make a couple of moves. But are they
McCutcheon
really?
McCutcheon, too, right?
Yeah, and that's right. And McCutcheon, see, but he's in that even. To me, he's the one who's diminished more than, say, a guy like Lorenzo Cain. But they go out and get McCutcheon. So they're kind of in that middle ground. Are they really going to compete, especially with the Dodgers and how good the Diamondbacks and Rockies were last year? Are they really going to compete, or are they just spinning their wheels? Should they have started a complete overhaul of their system?
If you look at the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, too, we're talking about a lot of really young, good talent.
Absolutely.
On both teams. Jake Lamb, you've got Goldschmidt, A.J. Pollock, still with the Diamondbacks.
Yep.
And really, it's almost like the entire Dodgers roster is loaded with young guys that can really swing it and are very athletic.
Absolutely. So now, again, we're getting close to pitchers and catchers reporting. The Brewers make the first big moves, especially from a free agent signing standpoint. Are we going to see some other dominoes start to fall? I would have to think so. And the Cubs are still kind of deciding, do we go with what we have? Do we wait until after the All-Star break if we're going to go after another pitcher? Because as we've talked about here before and on SportsBeat as well, they're in a situation where they don't have all these prospects now in their minor league organization. If they're going to move somebody, it's going to have to be for the major league roster. But I think they've got the kind of guys, whether it's Happ, Schwarber, whoever,
right,
if they really wanted to go get a pitcher, they could do it.
Well, yeah, they've got some guys on their big league roster that they could make that swap, I would think, fairly easily, and it'd be a valuable addition.
But then you're going to give something up offensively now.
True, and you still have Jason Hayward in the outfield eating up quite a bit of money and not hitting.
Good outfielder though. Good outfielder.
And I don't think are there going to be too many teams that there's not going to be too many teams that are attracted to his contract either.
No, that's exactly it. You can't move it. And that's why there was that rumor early in the offseason, I think it was around the time of the winter meetings, that maybe the Giants were interested. And I think everyone's ears in Chicago perked up. Please be interested.
take this money.
That's exactly right. All right, Sean and Sharply, Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT. Of course, we're presented by Sharply Training and by Lechleitner Door. Sharply Training with us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234, or visit sharplytraining.com. I saw you've got a pop-up quarterback clinic coming up here at Adams High School.
And one other quick thing, too, back with the Cubs. David Garner, a local guy from Niles, played baseball at Michigan State. This is his second year in big league camp. He trained at our facility last year leading up to his big league invite. So he'll be leaving to big league spring training here pretty soon. Yeah.
Wish I had ding bell, but yeah, hey. Plug all those guys that you can, right? I mean, that's a guy who could end up on the Cubs major league roster.
Yeah, this year. He certainly could. He certainly could. He throws hard.
He does. I got to see a little bit of him when Michigan State came here to town one time. He can bring it. That's for
sure.
And then
he was with South Bend, and then I know spent some time last year between AA and AAA, mm-hmm. and finished out the season really strong. And that's why he's getting an invite. But yeah, we have a lot of quarterback camps going on. Right? We had one in Kalamazoo last weekend, which is only about 50 minutes to an hour from here. We had 12 quarterbacks. 10 of those were all new that had never worked with us before, and we had some receivers as well. But we've got one at John Adams High School. It's going to be February 24th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Quarterbacks and wide receivers will get you in, get some good skill work. We know that it's tough to get outside in the winter, so we'll be in the gym. But as soon as the weather starts to break, we'll have a lot more of these pop-up type of camps, mini camps, outside as well. And then, obviously the summer is a really important time leading up to the fall, so we try to keep everybody as busy as possible.
Absolutely. All right. Good stuff. So, again, you can visit sharplytraining.com or call 226-8234 or also Twitter. What's the Twitter handle?
At Sharp Training.
Yeah. That is very easy to remember. Okay, big news for Notre Dame basketball. The hits just keep rolling right in, unfortunately. And I don't mean to laugh, but that's almost all you can do at this point for Mike Bray and the Notre Dame basketball team. Bray announced yesterday that Matt Farrell, point guard, is going to be out for at least two games, maybe more, due to his ankle injury. He made the announcement during his media session Thursday, and then talked about it again last night with Jack Nolan on the coach's show here on WSBT.
Well, he did not improve, and Sunday through Wednesday, we thought maybe he'd come back with some rest a little better, but he did not improve, and the MRI showed a bone bruise in there, and so, a bone bruise needs to be rested. He just can't play at 80% and then ice him and not practice. We're not getting anywhere with that, so we've got to shut him down indefinitely. Maybe we'll see how he feels the middle of next week, but if he's got to be out four games, five, he cannot come back till he's healthy. It's not right. It's not good for us, and we're going to have to do the best we can again. It's not the first time we haven't had to play without Bonds and Matt. Of course, we don't have DJ either. That makes it a little more interesting, but we do have a group of guys that have played without these guys, and they, so a lot on my seven guys. Those seven guys, there's a lot on them.
Yeah, and the seven guys right now, the starting lineup now for tomorrow night against Virginia Tech is set to be T.J. Gibbs, Rex Pfluger, Martin Gebben, John Mooney, and Nick Jogo, and then Elijah Burns and Austin Torres off the bench. So those are your seven, and then after that, you've got walk-ons Liam Nelligan and Matt Gregory. That's what you have for a roster right now when you've got Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell and D.J. Harvey all out.
It's a tough, tough situation. I mean, you've got guys that are playing that they thought they were going to be in those roles probably in a year or two,
yeah.
And they're in them now. So you have to grow up quickly, and it's when you're, and especially the caliber of player too, the guys that you're missing in Farrell and Colson. I mean, those aren't six men got type of guys. They're not role players. I mean, these are the guys that are your star players.
37 points a game, yeah. You're losing right there, and then rebound wise, almost 13 rebounds per game. Even though the team as a whole, even though Bonzi was averaging a double-double, the team as a whole has rebounded better in his absence. But obviously, they're in the midst of a four-game losing streak right now as well. And now you're without Matt Farrell again.
It's a must-win.
You left some eligibility on the table, right?
Yeah. I'll appeal to the NCAA right now.
Yeah, exactly.
See if I can get out there.
I mean, it was obvious. Farrell against Louisville, his first game back after he suffered that injury in the first half against NC State against Louisville. He comes right out of the gate, scores 15 points almost right away, but then the game goes to double overtime, and he only ended up with 23 points after scoring 15 in the first half. And then Clemson, he scored just 6 points. And so in those two games combined, 10 out of 36 overall, 6 of 25 from three-point range, just obviously
something's
was still
up.
Not
yeah.
himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's smart to give him some rest. I mean, you want him back, you want him in the lineup, but certainly if it's not healing, you're going to favor it. It could obviously, and it is obviously, you know, affecting what he's doing on the court.
Yep, absolutely. So, again, no Matt Farrell for at least two games, and the two games are tomorrow night hosting Virginia Tech. That's at 8 o'clock here on WSBT, 7:40 pregame with Jack Nolan. And then quick turnaround Monday at Duke. And I think that has to factor in there to some extent because you've got this off week, and if it's not responding during the off week and you've got to go boom, boom, back-to-back, two games in 3 days,
yeah,
it's not going to get any better when you've got to do that either.
No doubt.
And then they turn back around. After going to Duke, they go to NC State the following, a week from tomorrow, basically. So, three big ones.
Not an easy stretch of games left.
No.
And
talking about a Virginia Tech team that beat North Carolina by 10 points earlier this week. And when you look at the standings, Virginia sitting there at 8-0. They were disappointing last year, but they have really bounced back, unbeaten in the ACC.
And that's Notre Dame's final conference game.
I believe it's
at Virginia, I believe.
Yeah.
February 3rd. March 3rd.
Yeah, let me pull it up.
March 3rd.
Real quick. But Notre Dame sitting in a tie for ninth place right now in the ACC with a 3-4 record. They, along with Georgia Tech, who they've split with, Virginia Tech, and Syracuse, who they've beaten. And the date of that game is March 3rd. Yeah, and that's after the Pittsburgh game. And now, speaking of Pittsburgh, that is senior day, and that is February 28th. And Monzi Colson has sat in the last couple of Mike Bray coaches' shows, and he was there last night right off the top. And Bray also gave an update on what's going to happen with Bonzi going forward.
I think with him, you know, you'll take an x-ray here in February to see how that thing is calcifying and growing back. But it won't be earlier than 8 weeks, you know, and that's the end of February. And Bonds and I talked the other day. What's realistic for Bonds? Realistic would be he practices with us a little bit before Virginia. He plays a little bit in the Virginia game. And he's more ready to play in Brooklyn at the ACC tournament. That's what we've got to hope for. And that's probably as good as it gets.
Now, it's serious stuff. You had joked about sending him out there the night of the Pitt game for the opening tip and pulling him off. You think you might do that?
I'm still going to do that. He is going to be dressed on senior night, and he'll go out in the starting lineup. And if we get the tip, we're going to call timeout. If they get the tip, somebody's going to foul. So the clock stops, and I'll sub him right out.
Sure, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
He'll get the tip. He'll steal it, go in for a dunk, and say, I'm not coming out.
No, so no.
I might score.
I want him to be introduced. Obviously, Matt Farrell to be introduced. And, you know, that night, we'll probably start all our seniors. You know, we'll start them all that night. But the realistic timetable is what I said. And you know, he's working toward it. But it can't be earlier. You know, we're going to be really safe with this.
So there you go. Mike Bryant, his coach's show last night at O'Rourke's and heard here on WSBT. Bonzi's going to get out there and at least have a token play for a few seconds so he could be introduced into the starting lineup at Purcell Pavilion one last time against Pittsburgh on February 28th.
I don't know what to say.
We need a webcam.
Is that what you do?
Because the look on your face said it all to me.
I mean, I guess I get it, but you're going to foul or call a timeout?
Right off the bat.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, if you've got, and this is no offense to Liam Nelligan or Matt Gregory, but they're seniors too, so I would assume that they're going to be, that they might, at least one of them might be part of that if he's saying they're going to start all the seniors. But you've got.
Are they going to sub them all out then on the timeout or the foul?
What I'm saying is you've got fouls to give if you've got them on the floor.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Stick with the foul. Then.
If
don't
Matt
use
Freeman
the
can do it, if Matt Freeman for Oklahoma, did you watch that game?
I did not.
The other night, they came in and they basically did the hack-a-shack on Udoka Azubuike.
Okay.
Who was a 42% free throw shooter at the time. He's 7 foot tall, but he is a horrible free throw shooter, and so they fouled him. This Freeman guy comes in with around 3:45, something like that, to go, and he fouls out in 2 minutes on the floor while Azubuike goes to the free throw line and bricks all the free throws to let Oklahoma come back to to win. Wow. But so what I'm saying is, if they can do that with a guy like that, then Mike Bray can afford a foul early on from one of these other guys.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more, I guess, more about the gesture than anything.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. When you look at what Notre Dame has going on right now, and again, the starting lineup, TJ Gibbs, Rex Pfluger, Martin Gebben, John Mooney, Nick Jogo, most likely tomorrow against Virginia Tech, with then Burns and Torres, your only other two scholarship players. Now, they won, don't forget, they beat Syracuse without Bonzi and Farrell in the lineup. Now, they did have DJ Harvey, even though he didn't have a great game in that game. And they also took Carolina down to 1 point without those guys. Again, they had Harvey, but so now they have none of those three. But what is the mindset of this team have to be when you're going into this stretch without your big guns?
Well, I'm sure right now, you know, physically they're probably pretty exhausted. I think mentally more than anything is, you know, it's got to be during the game. I mean, if you're, you know, you're looking for one of those two guys, or really those three guys now with the way Harvey played during that stretch, even though they still lost, is who's really going to step up consistently, and can we get that consistent play? It's got to be from every guy. And when we talked with Tom last week, that's what he said is, I mean, it's got to be a complete effort from each guy. And if you're not getting that level of play from each player each night, you're certainly going to be in trouble. And in my mind, it probably would be one of those, like, here we go again type of feelings. If things don't work out, or, you know, guys aren't able to knock down their shots, from a consistent standpoint, and that's really what it's got to be. And you know, they have to find something. You know, whether it's a level of chemistry, or hoping that somebody gets hot or gets really hot. You know, someone's got to be the catalyst. Something has to be the catalyst, because I mean, you're playing, you know, two guys down right now, and we talked about, you know, what's missing, their production. You know, It's an all hands on deck, but you gotta rally behind something. You know, whether it's a motto, or, you know, within that locker room, you know, you gotta find something. You gotta dig deep, because it's not a good situation.
And I think that if nothing else, we have seen these guys who weren't getting as many opportunities, who've got a lot more playing time since these injuries. They have raised their level of play. Now, sometimes it hasn't all come together. Like it was better at Syracuse, for example, where Rex Pfluger had 12, but then he came back after that and didn't have any points, and he's kind of been up and down. But I think you look at a guy like Gebben, who has absolutely made the most of his opportunities, no doubt, averaging a double-double in ACC play since these injuries. And all they needed was guys to raise, each of them to raise their game a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe if that's the line that a guy like Pfluger, for example, can find, is he doesn't have to be the guy. He doesn't have to do everything. He still looks like he's pressing sometimes.
Let's be around 8 to 12, but I can't be at zero.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
If he's sitting there at least 8 points a game, couple assists, playing some good defense, that's really all you need from him. He doesn't have to go out there and try to be hitting threes all the time. Maybe find a little mid-range, which there is no mid-range game, it seems like, anymore. Right. But find a little of that. Maybe that kind of helps him as well. It is coming up on 12:24, Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on Mishiata Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. And again, Notre Dame hosts Virginia Tech tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, and you'll hear it here on WSBT with a 7:40 pregame. Football news as well this week, and two coaching hires made by Brian Kelly. One of them, the safeties coach, Terry Joseph, not official yet until the vetting process gets finished. He comes from North Carolina, and really for a bad team, North Carolina's secondary.
Always liked their secondary.
Yeah.
They had some great players. And in scouting them over the last couple of years, when Notre Dame played them, was very impressed with what he did on the back end. Some athletic guys, too. So I would assume, I haven't checked on his recruiting background, but they've had players and obviously done a pretty nice job of developing those guys too.
And then the other, and of course, Joseph also, in addition to North Carolina, he was at Texas A&M for a few years, Nebraska and Tennessee before that. So he's got a long track record.
The difficult part with that, you know, no doubt, is that he's replacing the guy who called and ran the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's going to be in a little bit of a different role, and really learning a new defense. With Clark Lee calling the shots. So I'd be interesting to see how that dynamic works. It's Lee's defense now as, I don't want to use necessarily the word, a pawn, but he's been the understudy, would probably be a better word, understudy of Mike Elko over the past several years. And now it's his, time to put his stamp on what that's going to look like. But not having the guy that coached the safeties and called the defense, because of how important those positions are, the stud, the whip, and then obviously the rover position too, you better believe that Clark Lee and Terry Joseph are going to have some long conversations together to make sure that back end looks how it's supposed to.
Yeah, and I think that when you talk about that, because now you've got Jeff Quinn coming in on the offensive line as well, for whether it's either one of those guys, how do they fit in? Not just at Notre Dame and the whole thing, but with the staff as well. How are the let's get to the Quinn stuff, I guess, because he goes from analyst to replace Harry Hiestand as the offensive line coach. And one of the big criticisms that you see from fans this week, that the fans who don't like it, and it's been pretty overwhelming that the fans are not happy with the whole thing, but they consider him just a yes man as opposed to someone who can come in and challenge Brian Kelly or whoever it happens to be. And I don't know that you necessarily have to have that. So just your take on Quinn getting moved up and into the offensive line coach spot.
We talked about this last week. It was a lose-lose. I mean, when there's a departure with arguably the best offensive line coach in the nation, no one's going to be happy.
It's going to be a natural drop-off, right?
Yeah. And, I think it would be a disservice to have, somebody hired and try to be Harry Hiestand. He was unique. I mean, that's why his offensive linemen liked him. Now there'll be an adjustment period, with Quinn, no doubt. I'm sure that he's going to try to keep some of the continuity. And we talked about this on the defensive side with Clark Lee, is you've got a guy that's been in the program, that's been around Hiestand, that's been around these offensive linemen. He has a good gauge on their skill set and their talents. And, now he's tasked with filling a couple of holes and then making sure that, from left to right, there's good communication, cohesion, and chemistry.
Well, and that's one of the big things that everyone talked about, keeping the kind of culture and keep chemistry and the whole thing that Harry Hiestand developed, not just with that group, but with the rest of the staff and offense as well. When you're interviewing a pool of candidates, that's the one thing that none of us are privy to is just how those things...
He's been there on a day-to-day
the feel
basis.
That you get about how you're going to mesh with everything that's already going on.
And I think that's, that's an important part of the hiring process and that aspect. He's been there on a day-to-day, day-to-day process. He's been around the guys. He's developed relationships with these guys. He, as an analyst, he's breaking down the strengths and weaknesses of the offense and then obviously helping with game planning during the season as well. So he probably knows, from a scouting perspective, knows these guys better than they do. So that likely went into it. I'm a big fan, especially at the collegiate level, of maintaining that consistency. With how much coaching turnover there is everywhere in a college landscape now, it's very, very difficult to develop consistency like that from a year-to-year basis. When you constantly have new guys coming in, having to learn the offense, learn the terminology, there is the opportunity for you to take steps backwards.
He's already got to be aware of a lot of the strengths and weaknesses of some of these guys who don't have experience or
and
who are going
verbiage,
to be moving into new...
the play call, tendencies, all of those things, that's not something that he has to acclimate himself to. He's already there. Now he's the coach.
Right.
So now the voice is coming from him, but it's going to be a lot of the same information. It isn't going to be new to him. It's right now during the spring, when you're looking to take steps forward... Anytime you have staff turnover, you don't want it usually, unless you're making the firing. Okay, if you have two guys leave to take quote unquote better jobs, that's, you know, that that's, you have to fill those holes. But now you're saying we don't have to bring this coach up to speed. He's gonna basically jump right in where he stand left off. Now he's not the same guy, but there is a level of consistency there that I think will be very helpful in making sure that, you know, this offensive line, they answer some questions here early.
He's coached offensive line for 24 years in college. So, yeah. I mean, he's got a long...
The background's there.
Yeah, really, with the exception of his time as the head coach at Buffalo and his time here as the analyst on the Notre Dame staff, the rest of the time since 1984, I think it is, he was coaching offensive line in college. And the biggest problem I have, everyone's got a right to not like the hire, to not like whatever it happens to be, but here's my thing. The one thing, I've heard a lot of griping and complaining. The one thing I haven't seen is, at least from 99% of the people, is who would you have hired instead?
It's a great question.
Who's the guy you were going to go with? I haven't seen any of that. I haven't said, this guy would have been better, that guy, whatever, or this is who I would go with. I haven't seen any of that. All I've heard is everything that's wrong with Quinn and why, and not even a lot of specifics on why he shouldn't have been hired, other than he's connected to Brian Kelly over the long
haul. It's got to be sour grapes with
Ben Gorder and...
Well, with he stand leaving. I mean, that's... What do you do? Where do you go from there?
Yeah.
So I think when you're interviewing
Are you going to get Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach of the Patriots? I mean, I guarantee you he's one of the premier coaches in all of the NFL. I guarantee you 90% of the people didn't know his name. Right?
True.
But I mean, so who there are no name brands when it comes to offensive line coaches for the most part.
No doubt.
Unless it's just some guy who happened to play for your team back in the day, whether it's Nolan Cruz or whoever. Yeah. You know, so Andy Heck and the whole thing. So in any case, okay, tell you what, we're going to take a timeout. I want to come back and talk a little bit about this XFL thing and get some of your thoughts, especially from a player's perspective and kind of see what you think about a new league forming and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be interesting with Vince McMahon making that announcement. We'll also talk a little bit about the Baseball Hall of Fame vote this week. I know Evan is ready to tee off literally on the whole Barry Bonds issue, so I'm interested to hear some of that. It is 12:32, Sean and Sharpley Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT.
The new XFL will be fan-centric with all the things you like to see and less of the things you don't. And no doubt, a lot of innovations along the way. We will present a shorter, faster-paced, family-friendly, and easier-to-understand game. Don't get me wrong, it's still football, but it's professional football reimagined.
That, of course, is the voice of one Vince McMahon. The XFL is back.
What do you think, Evan Sharpley?
Sign me up.
Sign you up, that's right.
Do you have a XFL name yet?
What do you mean?
If you played in the XFL, what would your name be?
Now this is going to be real football. Are they going to they're doing away with the gimmicks, right? There's no more he hate me and all that, I thought.
I hope there's still some gimmicks.
I don't know.
What would your name be though?
Real football. That's a good question.
So there's a name generator. You ready for this?
Okay,
we'll play this game real quick.
Okay.
So if you're just going with a one long word name on the back of your jersey,
okay,
your favorite wrestler plus your death row meal, no spaces here.
Oh my gosh!
So for me, I've got Sting Ribeye. What do you got for?
Even though I soured on him later on, I guess no. You know what? I'm gonna go with Roddy Piper.
Okay.
I changed midstream. Roddy Piper pizza.
I like that. Right, that's a good one right there. All right. Okay. How about if you're gonna go with two words, the first word of your favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, plus how Tom Brady makes you feel.
The first word. See, just I can't say one. The first word of my. The movie itself.
Yeah.
Okay. Pulp. Pulp Fiction.
Okay. So Pulp, and then how Tom Brady makes you feel.
Pulp. Man, See, Tom Brady, I don't really have an emotion for him one way or the other. Pulp milk toast.
All right. Okay, and then the last one, if you're going to go three words here, your favorite hair metal band, the body part you wouldn't have tattooed, and your favorite medieval weapon.
Are you going to do any of these? Poison butt axe.
All right. There we go. Yeah, sure. I'll do one here for this.
Is this going to make the new promo, by the way?
Quiet Riot face mace. All right.
Quiet Riot face mace.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then I didn't do the Quentin Tarantino. I still don't. We might need to switch the Tom Brady part. I would go with Inglorious.
Mm.
And I don't know how Tom makes me feel.
See, that's the thing. I think you either, if you love him or hate him, then you've got some pretty strong emotion. I take it you're kind of like me. You really don't. You don't hate him. You don't love him. He's just kind of.
I like him.
A really good quarterback.
But I don't know if it'd be like. I don't know words to describe it.
Yeah,
I'm just. Apathetic. No,
where did this
apathetic. All right. You go. Ingloriously apathetic.
Inglorious apathy.
All right. There we go.
Oh, boy. All right.
That was good.
That was. That was fun. Now, where did you find that, the name generator?
It's just the loop.
I assume Vince McMahon didn't officially sponsor that.
I don't think that he did. He did not.
Okay. Do you think
I'm sure more of those will come out, though.
Do you think it has a shot?
Well, it's not till 2020, so I think that part of it, you know, that's probably, that would be what would concern me. You know, with NFL ratings down this year, if it was something that could happen in a year's time, and try to pull some more people, from that aspect, maybe. But, I mean, we're 2 years away. I don't know.
I just...
If they are getting away from the gimmicks... They are trying to make it, you know, more legitimate. Who would you go after? Who would be your top, you know, 3 to 5 guys' names?
Well, see, that's the thing. Are they going to the thing that the world? There was a World Football League. You probably don't remember, right. And I'm not talking about the World League of American Football. I'm talking about in the 1970s. It was called the World Football League, and guys like Larry Zonka, Jim Kick, who ended up. They were actually, this was after their big run with the Dolphins. They had signed to play Danny White, who ended up with the Cowboys, signed Elsie Greenwood from the Steelers. Now, not all of those guys played, but they folded in the middle of their second year. Then, there, of course, there was a USFL that went out and was aggressive with guys like Steve Young, Jim Kelly, Herschel Walker. Those are probably the biggest name guys. They went after those guys because they knew they needed stars.
Big names, yeah.
Yeah, so can this new league, because that's the one thing the XFL didn't do, is they didn't go after any of the big guys. They couldn't get big name guys. So
going to try to take talent from the NFL?
That's a good question.
Is that the thought process right now?
Because with no TV contract, and that's what, and I mean, Vince McMahon did this the first time with NBC, and it didn't last very long. This was before NBC got back into the NFL with the Sunday night package and all that stuff. They were out of the NFL business, and they were trying to get something, and it didn't work out. But, I mean, that is huge. We're talking about billions of dollars that flow into the NFL that help afford these big contracts. It comes from TV revenue. Now, I know they think they're going to get streaming revenue and all that, but he wants to also play games in 2 hours, so there's not going to be any commercials, obviously, during these streaming games. So where is the bulk of your money going to come from? Because I can't see more than 10,000 to 15,000 people consistently going to XFL games, especially if they don't have big
games. And the payout's going to be lower, too, for the players, because for that very reason, sponsorship, commercials. I mean, you know, that's how the Cowboys, and that's how, you know, the Broncos and the Jaguars, that's how you're paying your players. And when you're creating these teams, if there's not that source of revenue coming in, how do you pay the players a higher salary? If, you know, I look at it one of two ways. you know, if they are going to be aggressive and go in and try to take some of these players from the NFL, that's one route to try to, you know, to make it legitimate. Or if you're going to go the opposite route of that, you have to go with gimmicks.
Right.
How do you, how else would you set yourself apart? Are you just going to say we're going to be a lesser tier game of football?
Well, and one of the things that he's saying, any player with a criminal record is precluded from playing. And I know he said that includes DUIs as well. So how is he going to, how is he going to field rosters, eight teams of 40 rosters. Players? How are you going to get those guys? Who's there, around? There, because even minor stuff.
I read an article, and this would have been 5 years ago. If you had a felony on your account, on your record, mm-hmm. you had a higher chance of getting drafted in the first round.
Really?
I don't think there was necessarily a correlation, but...
But the average NFL salary is right around $2 million. So let's say you're half of that for your roster. That's $40 million per team. We haven't even talked about, and he didn't mention yesterday. Now, we know he's the one who's going to be in charge. He's at the very least the Roger Goodell mm-hmm. of this new thing, but... What about, is he gonna run the whole thing? Is it all going to flow through him? Or does he really think that he's going to get eight owners to plop down cash and be a part of this? Because that's a big risk on their part, considering he's failed once right. with network TV backing, and he doesn't have any of that now.
The money doesn't make sense right now.
Yeah. And to me, it makes more, I know he wants to go counter NFL because... When you look at the other thing that he said, there's not going to be any kneeling or social issues mm-hmm. taking place down in the field. That is obviously a direct shot at the NFL, and he's made his logo red, white, and blue, so we know that he's trying to work some jingoism and the whole thing.
I figured if they do this, Kaepernick would be the first guy he should try to get to.
I mean, he already, apparently, there can't be Johnny Manziel because he's been busted.
Right.
You can only have Tim Tebow drinking his milk and going doing his thing.
Well, those are the top three guys on a list I'm reading right here. Colin Kaepernick, Tim Tebow, and Johnny Manziel. But Manziel can't now. Vince Young, Jared Lorenzen, Brett Favre, Michael Vick.
Lorenzen makes sense.
Herschel Walker.
Mike Vick. He's a little...
Yeah, he's not going to be able to make the cut on that one either. Chad Ochocinco. We get Dwayne The Rock Johnson playing.
Yeah. I was going through yesterday trying to figure out what stadiums, especially if he's going to try to get big stadiums full of people. Oakland's losing a team. San Diego's already lost a team. St. Louis has lost a team. Mm-hmm. So you've got potential there. I still think, again, based on the way he's angling this whole thing, as many teams in the South as possible has got to be what he's looking
for. It's too bad they blew up the Silverdome in Detroit.
San Antonio, Birmingham, Shreveport, Orlando, they've all got stadiums there. They don't have the big college in town.
Well, he's got 2 years to figure it out.
Yep. I can't see it sustaining.
I mean, if you're going to announce this, you know, with have a presentation of here's where we're going to be doing this, right?
You would think, especially you're 2 years down the road, that's not a lot of time to get all this worked out and think that it's going to be viable.
And get the money in.
When's the draft going to be, too? Because, they're going to start playing. He already had a little bit of, he said, late January, early February. But so are you going to do your draft after the NFL draft or after NFL training camps when everybody's
2019.
Been cut? Yeah. Like after everyone's been cut from an NFL roster, that's who you go for, maybe? I still think you're better off. The league that's going to make it would be in conjunction with the NFL, even though they don't want to be a feeder.
Like a D-League?
That's where you're going to have the best shot of getting actual players who have a chance of being professional football players is if you're in cooperation with the NFL.
But at this point, if you've already branded yourself as a gimmick-style league, isn't that what, you know, number one, I think fans would probably want that more than a watered down game of football. You either got to go after the stars, mm-hmm. you got to, or give me all the gimmicks.
All the gimmicks you
give
can
it,
find.
All of them. I don't know what they all are, but give them all to me.
I mean, players have to like this though, right? Because job opportunities.
Yeah.
Whether they're putting all these parameters on it or not. But
as long as they come up with a good name.
All right. Coming up on 12:47, we'll do a little Baseball Hall of Fame talk next. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, WSBT. Along with Sting Ribeye, I'm Poison Bud X. Our new XFL
name. XFL name.
That's right. Evan Sharpley found the XFL name finder earlier. We had a good time with that.
Good.
In case you missed it. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch with Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. We've got about 7 minutes to go before we get into the Rich Eisen Show here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. We were talking a little XFL earlier. 2 years from now, supposedly it's going to be there. We shall see. But earlier this week, want to make sure and touch on it. Baseball Hall of Fame, Trevor Hoffman, Vladimir Guerrero, Chipper Jones, Jim Tomei all get in. Mm-hmm. The notables on the outside looking in are Edgar Ramirez, the best designated hitter in baseball history, as well as Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. And I know Evan is, you're a big Barry Bonds guy. I would have thought that when we started this whole venture out. Bonds got 56%, a little over 56% of the vote. Clemens actually got more.
Yeah, 57.
57%. And that is what surprises me, because I think if you look at the argument, were they Hall of Famers before they used PEDs? I think that you can make that argument much more in Bonds' favor than Roger Clemens' favor, mm-hmm. because of the time Roger Clemens started allegedly using PEDs is when he went to Toronto, and his career, which was tanking fast, took back off like a rocket. He played 11 of his 24 seasons after
good right there, like a rocket.
Hey.
Nice.
Didn't even do that on purpose. But so he was 20-18 with ERAs of 4.18 and 3.63 in his last two seasons in Boston. But then he goes to Toronto when he allegedly starts the juice, and he goes 41-13 with ERAs of 2.05 and 2.65 in his first two seasons there. I think that without using the stuff, Roger Clemens' career is done by the year 2000, mm-hmm. and we're not talking about him as a Hall of Famer, borderline at best.
And Bonds still is.
I think Bonds probably doubt. Still is, because again, you look at
maybe
the way
some
his
of the maybe some
going.
Of the power numbers not there, but I mean he was stealing bags and hitting bombs when he first started in the league.
Yeah. Bonds was a lot more disliked though.
Oh, no one liked him
in his time in the game than Clemens was. Clemens, known as a great competitor, but I don't think he was.
Couldn't you make an argument too, because of how it's set up right now? It's not voted on by former players or guys in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
He did not get along with media members at all.
No, definitely didn't get along with Jeff Kent. We know that, but I mean, most of the people on his team, he didn't get along with, for that matter, as well as media members. But make the case. Why does Barry Bonds have to be in the Hall of Fame despite everything we know about him?
Did we discuss this last week or the week before? Nobody cares if you take steroids or PEDs in the NFL. Nobody.
No, that's exactly right.
It might even be encouraged. But for whatever reason, it is frowned upon in Major League Baseball. And there's also a shroud over PED use. You call it PED use, but it could be marijuana, it could be amphetamines, it could be steroids. You're lumping all of those together. You have guys from different eras saying that they took greenies and amphetamines too.
Sure.
There's not the stigma.
Different kind of performance enhancer.
Correct. So I guess where do you draw the line? Now we know what Bonds took. I mean, he got way bigger and way stronger. And McGuire is in that too, you know. Bonds is in that too, where they could go and play a game and then go work out. So there wasn't the fall off as far as your physical performance at year's end. So you were still performing in terms of like your force output and swinging the bat and all those things at a much higher level. Now, when I look at those guys, though, you know, hitting a baseball is hard. Now, taking steroids doesn't make you a better hitter. If you make contact, it may make the ball go further.
Right.
And we are talking about a recovery.
But a guy like Bonds, so who's times. Putting the ball, the barrel on the
no
bat
doubt.
All the time before he used it. That's why it jumped. He in his first 13 seasons, he hit 445 home runs. And that's roughly the point where he was not using the clear and the cream or whatever it was that he ended up using. After that point,
that's a good XFL name, the clear and the cream.
The clear and the cream. After that point, he had four straight seasons of 45-plus home runs, including the 73 that he hit in 2001. That's an obvious spike right there. But he had three seasons of 40-plus home runs in his first 13 seasons. Then he goes four in a row, including 73 with his
guess money. What? Everybody loved it when Maguire and Sosa and Bonds were hitting home runs.
But my point
they
is,
probably didn't want to believe. Right, I get what
already
you're saying.
445. Yeah. So he's at least going to be in the 600 club.
Sure.
If without doing anything, the whole reason he did it,
and you have Jim Thome at first
was because
Hall
he was mad about all the attention Maguire and Sosa were getting. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, you look at. Again.
But how do we know Jim Thome never did anything to recover from a shoulder injury?
We don't
at
know
some
any
point.
Of that. Who
right.
who was clean during those eras? I mean, I'm sure because it was so rampant, if you're a guy that's like, how do I compete with this when I know this is going on? I'm sure that discussion was had.
Right. Jim Thome got bigger over his career too. Let's not forget that. He was pretty lean and mean. Like Manny Ramirez. And where does Manny Ramirez fit into this whole thing? Arguably the best right-hand hitter ever. Where does he fit in?
I don't know.
Just because he started wearing his uniform a little bit baggier.
Bonds has got to be in there. He's got to be.
What about Manny, though?
I'd take Manny, too.
If you're putting Bonds in, do you have to put Manny in?
Yeah. Put him in.
Put them all in.
Bonds is a Hall of Famer.
What about Sosa? Put him
in? Maguire, yes.
So there's no line.
There's for
Put
me, there's no
in.
Line. Put them in.
Because it's a museum and none of it really matters.
Yeah, there we go. Nice. Yeah, let former players vote on it, too. Or guys in the hall vote on it, too.
I don't disagree with that.
I took some batting practice last night and did some Bonds mimicking. It looked pretty good.
All right. Sounds good.
Slugfest tonight at 4:30.
Good stuff.
Come and hit baseballs.
As always, with Sting Ribeye. WSBT South Bend.